Hello, everyone. This is Roger Marsh. Thank you for listening to this Family Talk broadcast. I'm excited you've joined us today as we bring you one of our best broadcasts from 2018. Throughout the month of December, we'll be highlighting our most listened to shows, along with some of Dr. Dobson's hand-picked favorites. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this popular program from this past year.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and we are grateful that you've joined us. Now, before we begin, I'd like to inform you that the programs that you're going to hear over the next days here on Family Talk are heart-wrenching, and they may not be suitable for younger listeners. We're going to be discussing the despicable and merciless evil of sex trafficking with a survivor of that industry. So if you would like to come back to listen to her powerful testimony another time, we encourage you to do so now. A few months ago, Dr. Dobson had the opportunity to talk with a brave and godly woman by the name of Jessa Dillo Crisp. Jessa was a victim of extreme sexual abuse by her own family, who also prostituted her out and forced her to pose for pornography. All this happened between the ages of 10 and 21. Today, she's going to share how unbelievably traumatic this experience was for her as her parents would travel from Canada to the United States to make money off of her in the larger cities. Her story is not complete, however, without a great deal of love and grace. Jessa will also explain to Dr. Dobson how, through the help of a complete stranger who recognized the signs of abuse and trafficking, she was able to escape to Colorado. There she would learn about God and realize his overwhelming love for her, which she had never experienced before. While in Colorado, she would also meet her husband, John, who you will also hear on the broadcast today as well. There is a lot more to her story that you're going to want to hear today, and as you listen, you will hear the healing that has occurred over the past few years and how God has radically transformed and rehabilitated her life. Okay, with all that said, let's listen now to the first part of Jessa Crisp's testimony, which we've titled A Story of Redemption, here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
There are major issues that are facing marriages and the institution of the family. I think they're more threatening and more painful and more damaging today than even when I started back in 1977. And I want to share something that is on my heart today in that regard. When I was in college, I studied man's inhumanity to man. And if there is anything in life that depicts the depravity of the human heart and the human race, it is what is being done to children today. We've talked about this before, but today we have a real-life example of that utter wickedness as it occurred in the life of a child who is now a grown woman, and I want you to hear from her. Her name is Jessa Dillo Crisp, and she lives here in Colorado Springs. And if her story does not affect you deeply, if it does not move you, then you have no understanding of morality and immorality, of good and evil, of sin and depravity, and of what wounds the great heart of God. I'm absolutely sure of that. Jessa's husband is here with us today, John. Thank you for being at the table as well. First, tell me, John, how long have you been married?
We've been married going on 3 years.
3 years.
As of June 6th, it'll be 3 years.
How'd you meet this lady?
That's such a great story. So I had recently arrived in Colorado to go to Bible school at Nazarene Bible College, and Jessa was already a student there. And I remember we had chapel night, and I would go to chapel, and I saw Jessa. I noticed her across the way of the chapel, and she was just worshiping with this abandon and this authenticity, and I was very attracted to that, her heart, and I could just sense that something was very different about her. And I said, I want to get to know her. And you know, on college campus, a lot of times there are superficial relationships, and we had come to be friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I tried to ask her out for coffee, and actually,
you fox.
I thought that would be an easy first step, you know. But actually,
a girl goes to a Bible study and winds up with you chasing her.
So. Right. She actually shut me down pretty bad and unfriended me on Facebook and said, "No, I'm not interested." And that's how we met. But then there's a 2-year gap where. Yeah. God just, through that experience, God kind of gave me peace to continue to pray for Jessa. Mm-hmm. And he put a lot in those 2 years as he continued to work in my life and draw me to him, and similar experience with Jessa. And 2 years later, I was coming back from chapel and a prof approached me and said, "Are you dating anybody right now?" And I told him that I wasn't. And he said, "Well, you need to ask that Canadian girl out." And the interesting thing was he didn't even know Jessa. And I've mm-hmm. asked him after the fact what prompted that comment. And he said he believes it was the Holy Spirit. But so I told him that I had already asked her out 2 years previous and had been rejected. And he said, "Well, don't give up so easy." And I thought that God was putting that back in front of me. And I said, "I'm going to do this." So I approached her on campus and asked her out, and we went for a run together, and that was our first date. So that's how we met.
So. You have fond memories of those romantic days.
Oh, completely, and yeah. Still very romantic.
Very romantic. Very
I
romantic.
Want our listeners to pay attention to your voice, because there I hear two things. Mm-hmm. I hear strength. Mm-hmm. And I hear tears, and I see tears. Hmm. Both those things are in your life, aren't they, and in your heart?
Yeah, both of those things are definitely in my life and in my heart. And it's interesting how both of those things can coexist together. And I think that very much is part of my story and our story, is the ways that joy and tears have coexisted together.
Well, let's go back, as I said, to 10 years of age? Is that a good time?
So actually, can we start a little bit earlier than that?
Oh, by all means. So, it's your story.
Thank you. So my story started when I was actually born in Toronto, Canada. And I was born into a family that perpetrated great evil against me. And it started off with childhood sexual abuse. And then it moved into child pornography and me having to post.
As you being the victim?
Me being the victim. So the child pornography became a place where I was having to pose for the pornographers, and almost like a China doll with a smile plastered across her face, I had to do things that no child should ever have to do. And that became a time where I experienced great pain, and it was taken from me in the sense of men and individuals were doing whatever they wanted. And
were you sold for that purpose?
So I was used in child pornography. The actual selling of my body actually came later, shortly later. It wasn't long, and there definitely was an overlap. But I was then sold for sex inside my neighborhood to individuals, and then was taken to bigger cities and sold once again for the purpose of sex. And then I was also brought to the USA for the purpose of sex, being sold for sex.
That's called trafficking.
It's called trafficking. And what I experienced is called familial trafficking, where I experienced my family being my main perpetrators to start with.
Yeah. Was there no one that you could talk to at that time?
You know, silence was so ingrained into me, and there really wasn't anybody that I could talk to. I wasn't allowed to go to school growing up. And so a lot of times children who go to school often have the eyes of teachers or other adults in their life that can see different things that could be taking place within that family system. And I unfortunately did not have that experience. And I remember just standing at the window as a child looking out and just wishing that I could be like the other children that I saw walking to school. And I wished that I could have like a lunch sack, a paper sack, and go play in the playground. And I will always remember that strong desire I had as a child to go to school like that. So, no, there really wasn't anybody that I know of that could have said anything or could have done anything.
Were you threatened with harm if you revealed what was happening?
I did, and it's often with individuals who are being trafficked and individuals who are being abused. It's very common for them to have threats made against them, and I often had those threats made against me. If you ever share or talk about this, then we will hurt you or we'll hurt your loved ones. And so that was something I experienced, and it is something that, as I work with victims of human trafficking today, it's something that is a very common theme with each of the survivors that I engage with.
Yeah. Give us the time frame. When did the things happen that you're talking about now?
Yeah. So I did not go to school as a child. I never went to school.
You never went to school?
I did not go to elementary school. I did not go to middle school. I did not go to high school.
You have any kind of formal education or informal?
So that is like where redemption comes in. And that's like God's miracle. So kind of to tell a little bit more of my story, I did not escape until I was 21 years old. And it was when I was 21 that I was actually at a hotel in Kansas City. And a woman approached me. And this woman, who is a mental health professional, saw the signs and symptoms of somebody who was being trafficked. And she reached out to me, and she gave me hope in that moment. She actually gave me her contact information on a small piece of paper. So she reached out to me, this woman did, and I actually was back in Canada when I got the nerve to go ahead and reach out because I was scared. I was scared about the threats that I had experienced, and I was scared about the consequences or potential consequences. And I reached out and called this woman who had reached out to me, and the first phone call absolutely changed my life. During that phone call, she said, "Jessa, did you know your life is not defined by sex?" She said to me, "Did you know at the age of 21, you can make the choice to leave?" And that was
Had ever said that to you.
Nobody had ever said that to me. And so it was a whole new concept. And it started to change my mind. It started to change my perspective. And that call was just one of many that took place. And we would talk on the phone, and she would continue to speak truth in me and over me. And it was shortly, to back up just a little bit, it was a couple months later that I actually ended up escaping. She helped me put together an escape plan. And so,
you know, the thought of somebody being controlled and handled and threatened by a pimp is terrible, but when it happens within a family, mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about devastating.
Completely devastating, and I think that's one of the things that we are so passionate about, John and I, is bringing awareness. There's different types of trafficking, and there's different ways that trafficking happens. And so familial trafficking is only one typology of how trafficking is taking place. We have pimp control trafficking. We have gang control trafficking. We have domestic servitude. We have labor trafficking. And so familial trafficking is trafficking, and it's only one kind of trafficking. And that was what I experienced.
You know, people hear the word trafficking and don't understand what it means and don't feel the impact of it and don't realize their lives, their children that are young lives that are today absolutely captured by this industry, which is usually done for money. And we had Linda Smith here. She was a former congresswoman. Have you ever met Linda?
I have.
She's given her life to this issue.
She has.
And has done a world of good. But she told us things when she was here that haunt me about the fact that a man maybe being out of town can go to a hotel, pick up a phone, and within 30 minutes have a child. If you call an early adolescent a child, and I do, mm-hmm. Delivered to his door and make a payment, and then he does with her whatever he wishes to do. Now, come on, folks. This is not an unusual thing. This is happening all over the world, and it's happening in other countries in ways that often lead to death. So you have studied what you went through now, haven't you? And you understand a whole lot more about it.
I really do. And so I actually train Homeland Security and other different offices on what human trafficking is, what it looks like here in North America, and then practical ways that nonprofit organizations, faith-based organizations, as well as governmental organizations can do to respond.
Yeah. I said I hear strength in your voice. One would never know, sitting here talking to you, where you've been and what you've experienced. What kind of woman are you to have overcome this? And your life is together today. Is Jesus Christ the cause of that?
Completely. He is my healer. And he has done an absolute miracle in my life. And I praise him. Can I go back to the education story?
Please do, yes.
So basically, I was able to escape, and I was able to come to America, where I entered a safe house.
How did you escape? Let's go through that story.
You know, this woman helped me put together an escape plan, and she helped me put together all the details. And so what happened was I actually was able to, one evening, just walk out of the house and leave. And I look back at that and I'm like, that's a miracle in and of itself that God enabled me to escape. And
how'd you get across the border?
So I did have my passport and I was able to get across the border. I took a flight and was able to get across the border. And this woman helped me put all of those pieces together. And when I came to America and entered the safe house, I actually only had a 2-month visa to stay in the States. And that tourist visa expired, and so was able to get an extension for 6 months. And so was able to be here, and that was a really special healing time for me, because for the first time in my life, I experienced things that I had never experienced in my whole entire life. And it was incredible because I got off the plane at DIA and I felt the sun for the first time just kiss my face and my arms. And it was like, whoa, this is such a beautiful experience. And being able to get in the car and drive down I-25 to Colorado Springs and see tumbleweed for the first time was like an experience that I had never had as well. And I made a vow to myself that someday I was gonna experience freedom internally, just like I was seeing the tumbleweed externally roll down the road. And that became this mark, this almost like that stake in the ground that someday I'm going to be able to be free. And so I was at the safe house, and the day came, though, when my visa was about to expire. And that was a really scary time for me because I did not know what was going to happen. I knew I had to go back to Canada, but I did not know what was going to happen. And so I eventually ended up going to Vancouver, BC. And I did not know anybody safe, and I did not know where I would even go. And so
you feared you might wind up in the same kind of situation in Canada.
I did. And that was truly a very realistic fear. I was a very vulnerable individual, and very much in a place of having the possibility of being hurt and re-exploited. And so when I went back to Canada, I actually went back to Vancouver, and it was at the end of 2009, and ended up at a safe house in Vancouver. And it actually started to shut down shortly after I arrived because the 2010 Winter Olympics were about to start. And I don't know if you've ever been in an Olympic city as the Olympics are about to start.
I have been, yes.
Yeah, it's quite the experience. And so the Canadian government, from my knowledge, was removing money from some of the resources that I was taking advantage of and was needing to survive and needing to be able to live. And so the safe house shut down, and I ended up being homeless and ended
up— I don't believe that. Where is the compassion of mankind, knowing that there is a location, what you call a safe house, where they're dependent upon the funds from government to keep operating, mm-hmm. and they shut it down, and you go to the street?
I did, and it wasn't just me who was experiencing it. Some of the schools were also having issues with funding, some of the hospitals, some of the government hospitals. And so it was a lot of people were affected by the Olympics in 2010 in Vancouver, BC. And so I ended up being at a church where I was partaking of this big, beautiful pancake breakfast. And something about me is I love pancakes. And I was like, pancakes, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, give me pancakes. And so I had my plate of pancakes and I went downstairs to the basement of this church where I got some coffee and orange juice and sat down at a table. And a woman actually came up and sat down beside me. And one of the things that she said to me was, I see that you've been abused. And at the moment, at the time, I was like, is this something that I wear across my forehead? Everywhere I go, do people know that I've been traumatized, that I've been sexually abused? And it kind of took me by surprise. And then she went on to say that she too had experienced abuse growing up and that she knew what it was like. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And she basically befriended me. And I, in my very vulnerable state, was looking for friends. I didn't have any friends in Vancouver, and I didn't know anybody. And so for her to approach me and offer friendship to me, I was very open and receptive of that. And so I kind of clung to it. And we went and saw a hockey game on one of the big screens because we couldn't get tickets to go and see the game in person. And that was an experience. I remember shouting. I remember screaming with just pure delight. Then she asked me if I would go out for dinner with her. And I was like, sure, I would love to go out for dinner with you. So we went out to dinner and she had all these appetizers brought to the table. And I was like, oh my goodness, food. I'm so hungry. And she told me I could choose whatever I wanted off the menu. And so as my Alfredo was coming to the table, she looked at me and again said, you're the most special, but I love you. And I have a lot of girls just like you, but you are my favorite. She then told me that my hair color had to change, that my eye color had to change, that my clothing needed to change, but it was because she loved me and wanted to take care of me, and she wanted to be my mom. And
she was setting you up, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And so I went back to her apartment, and she shut the door, and she looked at me, and she said, my name is not the name that I had told you it was. And that kind of took me by surprise, and she was standing in front of the door. I couldn't leave, and that evening, I ended up being gang-raped and turned out during the 2010
winter. Did you say gang-raped?
That's correct. And turned out during the 2010 Winter Olympics. And so I was trafficked during the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver, BC. One of the things that trafficking is called here in the U.S. is called the game. And the way that I respond to that is by saying the 2010 Winter Olympics was not a game for me, but rather it was a time of sadistic evil and complete pain. And it is a miracle that God redeemed my life and rescued my life, and that I'm sitting here today with a husband beside me.
Well, we hate to interrupt that horrific story that Jessa Crisp was recounting, but we are unfortunately out of time for today's broadcast. If you know a loved one who has been sexually abused, or even someone with a similar story to Jessa's, we urge you to call our friends at the American Association of Christian Counselors at 800-526-8673. When they make the call, they'll be connected to a Christian counselor who will help them get out of this harmful situation and find a new life with Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Again, the number for the American Association of Christian Counselors is 800-526-8673. You can also find them online at aacc.net, and there you can find a counselor near you, or you can read through some of the other helpful resources that they have there as well. Again, that's aacc.net.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
You've been listening to Family Talk and one of our best of the best broadcasts from the year that was 2018. I'm Roger Marsh. Have a blessed day, everyone, from all of us here at Family Talk.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton for the Dobson Family Institute. You've been listening to one of our most powerful broadcasts from 2018. I can only imagine how moved you were by Jess's heartbreaking testimony. And I pray that you're going to see God's healing grace in the ultimate outcome of her story. You know, the horrible issues talked about today should inspire us to fight the evils of sexual exploitation at every turn. We here at Family Talk, we battle every day for justice, righteousness, and truth in culture. Your financial support of this ministry makes this mission possible. And from now till the end of 2018, hear this, every dollar that you donate will be doubled for greater impact. That means $10 becomes $20, $50 becomes $100, and so on. I hope you'll continue to stand with us and fight for all of God's children in 2019. Learn more about our ministry and our end-of-year matching grant at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or you can call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. Thanks for listening today, and I hope you'll join us again next time for more of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.